Welcome to Peter's Podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. My partner in conversation today needs no introduction if you've ever listened to Peter's Podcast before, because she's been on Peter's Podcast from the beginning. So I'm very happy to welcome Jenny Bloom back to the microphone. We're going to chat about all kinds of really interesting stuff. As we always do, we get into some good back and forth. So without further ado, here's yoga teacher Jenny Bloom. Enjoy. Hi, Jenny.
Hey, Peter.
You're starting out with laughter today. I think that's a good sign.
Yeah. Happy July 4th.
Happy July 4th.
Thank you.
Yeah. In meditation class today, I tried to pull independence theme in there. And I was talking about the, these two different parts of what comes from practice. One of them is like the inspiration part. And I likened that to the Declaration of Independence. You know, there was like, hey, this, you know, and so you have that thing, but then you also need to come up with the Constitution and figure out the structure and make it all happen and make it all work. Mm-hmm. And in our Ishta practice of meditation, we do what's necessary to bring about the free moment, the moment of inspiration, to get the thinking out of the way and have that. And then we bring it and bring it back down through this samyama practice, but then you have to live, right? And it's in living that so many of us end up in the stuff that occupies most of our thoughts, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Samskaras.
So, yeah. And just the karma of whatever's going on and how do you deal with that, you know? But if you're doing your practice right, then you keep getting inspiration that if you apply it, and that transitional practice of samyama is one of the ways. It's like, how do I be in meditation and also concentrate on something that's in the world, right? And we have a very formalized way that we do that in Ishta with the chakras, but it's a valid practice no matter what you're doing. You know, how do you stay present, you know, and be able to tap in and bring that back and use your inspiration in life?
Right. It makes me think of like when you go to see a movie and it's in 3D and they give you those glasses and one of them is red and one of them is blue.
Yeah.
And when you're looking at the screen, all of the images are like three-dimensional and they're existing with you.
Right.
And then you take them off and you kind of, the screen looks weird, everything.
It's blurry.
It's blurry.
Yeah.
So what you're saying about samyama and how do we stay connected, tapped in, and also present with our karma and what's showing up in our world at the same time, it is that sort of interesting balance.
Yeah.
Because it's actually almost insane. You know, most people have no idea what we're talking about right now. Like,
I know it's amazing, right? To think of what, how hard it would be to live that way. Of course, we all did.
Yeah, exactly.
Before we figured out how
to
have a practice like this.
Right. Because it really is like being able to see something that almost that no one else can see, even that you couldn't see 5 minutes before you did your practice. And then being able to stay connected to that at the same time as you're actually staying connected to all of these very dense experiences, or being able to have that bridge in a felt sense way. And we're talking about philosophically because that's sort of where we can access it. But how do you actually access it
in reality?
Yeah.
And that becomes much more of like a near shamanic experience. It's like you're able to be in two worlds.
One foot. One of my teachers talks about that, like having one foot in each world, one foot in this world, one foot in that world.
Yeah. And that's a tricky balance too, because it's so easy to get swept up and then not take care of business, mm-hmm. for instance,
right.
which you've been doing a lot of lately.
Right. And it's interesting. Yeah. Because for a long time I was running my own thing and doing a lot of freelancing and taking on clients, and sort of got to a point where I didn't want that anymore. Mm. And I realized I wanted to have a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
Job! Mm-hmm. Totally something that I would have eschewed before now.
Yeah.
And I was really fortunate I was able to get one. Which is, it's hard right now. It's a mm-hmm. hard job market. I got a job and I'm actually loving it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's totally super structured. Everything is very like clear lines, clear communication, clear expectations. And I'm like, my little heart is just like, yes.
Yeah.
And it's so not what I would have imagined for myself before. Mm-hmm. And it's something I would have rebelled against in the past.
Yeah.
But because of all of the work that I've done and my clarity around what my intention is,
mm-hmm.
it's actually just the right place, being in the right place at the right time and having something that is not what I expected, but also that fulfills all of my needs and also some of my expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's that funny thing, like the 3D glasses, being looking at something on a screen that doesn't actually, it's blurry and doesn't make sense. But then you get to have that, your practice, you get to make that connection. And then you bring that you refocus that experience of
the
samadhi,
clarity. Mm-hmm.
The clarity back through this denser realm.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly something that would have been very blurry before comes into beyond a pristine focus, like a three-dimensionality, a lived experience.
Right, right.
And it's so satisfying.
Yeah. And it's nice to get at it that way when you're thinking of it as, I'm just seeing more clearly and I'm able to see more clearly what's in me too and what's mm-hmm. out there. Then it doesn't feel so much like wishing and getting wishes granted and magical mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Because that's another place where it's so easy to get tripped up. You know, it's like, I'm doing this, I'm doing it right, I'm saying it right. Why am I not getting what I'm asking for? Right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, there's this funny space between feeling like I don't get to have what I want, or if nothing I'm doing is working, versus getting really clear and seeing that's the thing that's good for me. And then going at that, and then mm-hmm. you can get that because that's the right thing.
Right. And one of them isn't right or wrong. Like I had mm-hmm. so many years of wanting something and not getting it in so many arenas of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And doing my yoga practice now, I discovered Ishta in 2011. Now it's 2019. It's 8 years. Very dedicated.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's, you know, oftentimes when people come to yoga for the first time, there's this feeling like I should be good at this.
Right.
I should be able to touch my toes. There are all of these like associations people have.
I should be able to lose my depression.
Yes, I should be able to lose my depression. I should be able to stop being so addicted to this thing mm-hmm. or that thing. My life should suddenly make all this sense. And yet that's just not what a lot of people see.
Yeah. Yeah. Because why would you? It's a long haul.
It is.
I mean, it's essentially your life's work.
Right. Right. And it would be so, you know, I think it's fortunate for us to be able to put that here in time and space, that
mm-hmm.
that's actually completely normal, like to normalize that. I was just speaking with a friend who has just taken a major journey, relocated her life with this whole vision of where she wanted to practice and where she wanted to study and all of these things. And she's experiencing incredible challenges, incredible challenges. And for me, being able to hold that with compassion and really honor that she is doing all of the right things,
mm-hmm.
and yet it is challenging.
Yeah,
it was also hard for me, even though
I because you want to fix it somehow.
Exactly.
I mean, that's our nature too.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that, you know, in relationship, one of the things that Wendy has said to me many times that's so interesting is that yoga is relational. And that understanding that like yoga isn't just about how do I like it, it's relational within ourselves and with other people, and
mm-hmm.
the effects of our yoga practice are seen in how we relate to others.
Mm.
And oftentimes it's like when you're doing Warrior Three, like we did in your class today, in your asana class, like we're using the blocks, and then one leg comes up, and now we're balancing on two hands on blocks and one leg, and then option to take hands off blocks. And how do we still balance? Mm-hmm. And it's the same in that relational way.
Yeah.
Like I figured out how to be with myself most of the time in a pretty okay way. Good job, Jenny. It took 8 years. Great. Now on to people. Now on to
other people.
Yeah. How do I take that out of that focus and balance and be with that connection? That to inspiration, to openness, to not being judgmental, to really sattvas. Like, how do I be sattvic with other people?
Right.
When all of these things are going to come up.
Yeah.
Like, I want to tell her, this is what you should do.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily appropriate.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily even help her.
Yeah. But when you're out in the realm of interacting with other people, you're in the realm of Rajas and Tamas, you know?
Yeah.
So it's by its nature going to be throwing all kinds of things at you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so often, you know, we're in this, again, in this wishful thinking kind of thing, like, oh, if only this would be X, then I'd be happy, or I would have figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as we're looking outward, which we are, you know, 18 hours a day or whatever,
mm-hmm.
there's going to be all that stuff always coming up. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's bad, sometimes it's great, sometimes it's bad, and it just goes up and up. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then coming back to what we were saying about samskaras, how am I talking to my friend and somehow her story sounds just like what my story mm-hmm. sounds like? Does it? That's the question I'm starting mm-hmm. to ask. Is this actually my story?
Yeah.
Because it's not.
Yeah.
It's her story.
Yeah.
And so being able to listen to something that sounds so, that touches, that's like, it's like someone's playing a song and it sounds just like the song that I know how to play.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I know that song. This is what you do. And yet also it's not, because it's not her song. Even if her song sounds so similar to my song, it's actually her story.
Right.
And the only way that I can really, after the conversation, I didn't feel that great about how I talked to her. Like, I feel like I was totally being like a mom and being mm-hmm. like, this is what you should do. Doing all the things that I know that my mom did that I didn't like.
Right.
You know, but I was able to quickly realize that was off
mm-hmm.
and think for myself, where was I off in that conversation? And how can I take that understanding that I have and look at, like, first, readdress the relationship, because that needs to be addressed. It's not just about me.
Right.
Second, how do I understand what happened there in relationship to how I am with myself? Because mm-hmm. it's also relational.
Yeah. 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 And in your relationships, you want to keep an eye on the Rajas, the Tamas,
mm-hmm.
so you can navigate those.
Right.
But it requires awareness.
Mm-hmm. And then responsibility. So there's the awareness piece, which oftentimes we're like, oh, I'm aware of this.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it is fixed.
Yeah.
Not so.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Right. That's, well, it goes back to my Independence Day thing. Yes. It's like, it's not enough to just have the understanding or the recognition or the inspiration about it. Mm-hmm. Then you have to put it into practice.
And create structure.
Yeah.
And create that place. And that's often the hard work, really being able to, you know, because in terms of samskaras, like, I think about them like little patterns, like DNA, like mm-hmm. they're patterns that we carry with us that aren't even just ours. They're our parents, our grandparents, our great grandparents. Some say even seven generations.
Right. I mean, literally mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. what's going on. That is evolution.
Yes. Yes. And so it's how do we stay with that and also not just go along with that story that's pre-written? Because we do have some agency.
Yeah.
How do we find that agency? Because we don't have, right? Al says it's like 51% universe, 49% us. And you've known Al for so many years. He's gone in different places with that, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. But it has to do with this piece about, you know, you do have a say. You have free will. But the area it's mostly around is what you're thinking about it, right?
Mm.
Are you, because the events, the things that come about, I mean, I wrote a whole book on this novel Incarnation, you know, it's like the things are going to happen.
Right.
And it's like, what do you choose? How do you choose it? You know, you're not going to be, you don't have the option to be born as someone else. So you're carrying that DNA with you. You know, you're carrying your parents' upbringing of you with you. Mm-hmm. You're carrying so much stuff with you. And then you get to this like point and there's free will, but like it's so constrained by so many different things.
Factors.
So you make a choice. And if you're conscious, if you're aware, if you're all the things we've been talking about, then you're choosing in a way that's hopefully bringing a little more grace to the situation, a little more not repeating the same thing over and over again to the situation. Mm-hmm. And yet it could be very similar, right? It's maybe just a little bit better. And then it's going to take the next time around for it to get a little bit better, you know, to some point where it actually feels in any way dramatically different, right? Mm-hmm. But then again, I think of that more and more as the nature of our work on earth. You know, our life is this opportunity to keep making better and better choices, to keep growing in our understanding. And to me, the thing that we understand more and more ultimately is it's not the specifics of the situations, it's not the specifics of what those people are in relation to us, but how we operate in all those situations. That's the place we have the most agency. Mm-hmm. And that's the place where we are free to make mm-hmm. a difference in our lives and other lives. Mm-hmm.
Right? And in the world.
Yeah.
Because I think that what you're saying is so profound, because often I think for myself and for other people I've seen, we get scared to go back and say, hey, you know, this kind of didn't feel right for me. Mm-hmm. And I want to just check in, like, how mm-hmm. is that for you? I think we live in a world where appearances, the appearance of like connection is often considered more important than actual connection.
Yeah.
And it's so sad because I think so many people feel really disconnected and are seeking connection. Either, you know, I know sometimes I'll find myself just scrolling through Instagram and getting this false sense of connection with people who I actually want to be connected with, who I'm actually not connected mm-hmm. with by just looking at their faces and their beautiful moments. Mm-hmm. And that's why this is such an important, like, granular place for me right now. Like, how do I actually say, hey, this is what's actually happening for me right now. What's actually happening for you right now? Mm-hmm. And in those moments, I think it's the crucible. It's that place where you can actually change something.
Yeah.
Even if it's like the tiniest thing, like what you were saying about change shifting, just like a millimeter mm-hmm. and that creating a new cycle, like a new way that could be
a new way. Yeah.
Totally profound.
Yeah. Like Brené Brown was saying in her, her movie that's, I think, on Netflix, that, you know, she's done this thing with her husband where she'll say, the story I'm telling myself right now is this about the situation that they're finding themselves in, you know, because the situation is so painful. Mm-hmm. It's not working. It's something wrong. And it seems dire. But then when she shares the story, her husband has a totally different story in his head about what's going on right now, mm-hmm. you know? And we, just like you're saying, we're not willing to endure the painfulness, the vulnerability of opening up to that, mm-hmm. you know, can you tell me what's going on with you right now? And then being willing to hear it and not just justify mm-hmm. or...
Mm-hmm. Like not just checking out. Can you tell me what's going on with you right now? Oh gosh, this is really shitty. Ooh. I feel terrible. I'm going to think about something else.
Or,
I'm going to tell you actually how you're not doing the right thing. Right. And those are like rajas and tamas. Like those are different ways of like, either I'm like going to fight you. Like this is obviously very filtered through my perspective, my things that I've seen myself do, but like either, you know, it's like this like push or it's like this like leaving. How do I actually stay?
That's such a good description of tamas too, because mm-hmm. you know, sometimes we'll get in this little conversation about rajas and tamas. Well, don't you need tamas because it's like you can't be raja. It's
not
about active versus mm-hmm. passive. It's more about like, am I going to take this on affirmatively or am I going to withdraw from it? Right. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. when someone comes to you and they're sharing with you what's going on with them, and your answer is, I'm going to go get drunk right now,
right.
in response to what you just said.
Right,
that's
right.
a tamasic response.
Right. right?
I'm not going to participate in this response.
Right.
That's very different than doing child's pose
because yeah.
you've been doing too many sun salutations. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And you know, I think we often need to go through having had a rajasic or a tamasic reaction so many times, you know, to get to the point where we're actually in that place where we're like, huh, do I want it? Like, this person is telling me something. It's super hard for me to hear. Do I want to keep drinking this beer?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I want to keep drinking this beer. Can I stay present with them for another little bit of time?
Yeah.
What's actually happening inside of myself? And this is where we kind of come back to that, the value of asana practice.
Mm-hmm.
So we're learning how to hold that space.
Yeah, to be uncomfortable,
yeah.
to face a challenge.
Yeah, yeah. And then when we take it into our relationships, we can be like, oh, I am aware that I am uncomfortable. And I think we're also talking about emotions and the emotional body.
Right.
How can we access that
yeah.
in a world where we're not really taught those skills? Like, I didn't learn that in elementary school. Like, Jenny, if you're feeling a little sad, close your eyes and touch your heart. It's okay.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what anyone else is doing.
Right.
I didn't learn that in third grade.
And then you can come forward from that place.
Yeah.
Being comfortable and safe
mm-hmm.
and hear what they have to say and know it's not about you.
Yes.
Yeah, it's relational.
Yes.
You're just intersecting with another energy. Yeah.
Right.
It's true. It's, and that's why I say, I think it's our life learning, you know, because it takes so long to figure these things out. And by then, when you've done that, it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
If only I'd known this all the way back then, but then that's not what life is.
It couldn't have been that movie. It couldn't have been this movie.
Yeah.
If you had known in the beginning, it would be a different movie.
Right.
And somebody else who seems like they knew back then is living a whole different movie, and their challenges are totally unique
to
them.
They have new challenges. And it's like what you're saying about the seven generation thing. It's like the generations are going on. The mm-hmm. things that we're learning, that we're writing about, that we're teaching our children, they start from that place and then they continue on mm-hmm. from there. Mm-hmm. But it took us, you know, there's that great statement of, I can only do what I've done because I'm standing on the shoulders of who came before me.
Right.
You know, it's like all of us are doing that. And we are the shoulders for the next ones, mm-hmm. you know.
Completely. And what you're saying in terms of like being teachers, like, because you're my teacher, you're my mentor. And it makes, and I now have students who come to my classes and I get to teach in that way.
Yeah.
Someone once told me that for them, they were a teacher in a different tradition. They said, you always want your students to be in a way, they're going to be better than you at the things that you learned.
Yeah.
So you really want to help them get to be their best.
Right.
And at a certain point, it's really not about you at all. It's about empowering them to have these tools.
Right.
And that perspective is so radical in our world today,
mm-hmm.
to really live that, not to just say it.
Yeah.
How do I allow the people who I'm giving these tools to, who I'm relating to, how do I allow them to flourish freely outside of my own expectations mm-hmm. or story about them?
Mm-hmm.
How can I be in that place of wonder where I don't know what that person's
You're
life
gonna
is going to be? I don't, and how can I really relate to them from that place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I was always intrigued with the story of Freud and Jung, you know, because they were in that relationship mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. then split up over where Jung went.
Yes.
Right? So it can be fruitful even when there is a issue.
Conflict. Right?
Yeah. So
very fruitful because mm-hmm. right, Freud was the father of modern psychoanalysis, and then Jung is the father in so many ways, creating the Red Book, like all of the, he created that personality test that everyone is kind of, that many people are really obsessed with, like you're like an INFG or you know, being able to really test.
The Myers-Briggs
Myers-Briggs, that's what it's called,
That came out of Jungian.
Yeah, it came out of Jungian analysis, which is so mind-blowing, thinking about, like, you know, that seven generations thing, because Jung was all about the subconscious, the unconscious, collective unconscious, how are we all connected in this imagistic way, the world of dreams, and then...
Which is so related to yoga.
It's so related to yoga, and then somehow he had students who were able to take his studies and make it into one of the most... structured ways of defining someone's personality, and then people are obsessed with that in its own way. But it came out of that place of understanding all of the different aspects of you.
Podcasts stay afloat as labors of love, but they also need to pay the bills. Some do this through random ads. Others can get by as being infomercials for whatever's being talked about on the podcast. I'm hoping to support Peter's podcast, much like a pay-what-you-will yoga class. But there's no box at the front of the door here, so instead, I'm using the digital equivalent. That's why I'm asking you to please support Peter's podcast on patreon.com. Instead of a box, there's a link. It's easy, it's flexible if you want to vary your support, and most of all, it keeps this podcast going. Thank you to everyone who's already a podcast patron. And please check it out if you're not. Thank you.
Yeah. Evolution is mind-blowing.
It is. And yeah, and it's important to know that it's happening. You know, it's like, it's one of the places that politics is funky, because we're in this constant struggle between holding on and moving on, you know, and there's friction for all the normal reasons you would expect, you know, and yet somehow we have to move on.
Yeah. And we're in the pain.
And not lose who we are, because identity and tribe and all those things are very much a part of our physical reality. That is part of what makes us feel safe, you know, and some people more than others. So we have this whole diverse spectrum of types of people, and some are very much rooted to the earth and what's going to stay stable, and some are very much connected to the ethers and what could be.
You know, and sometimes these people end up mating somehow, which is just so wild. You know, and I think in every romantic intimate relationship there is some of that, like, not necessarily like that earthiness with that etheric, but we attract what is different from us.
Yeah.
And that's exactly, you know, the forces of attraction and repulsion work in this watery way that is like the positive side of a battery and the negative side of the battery are both needed in order to create energy.
Yeah.
And so those energetic connections come, and often almost always the ones that really like last have that sort of like push pull, like this way, that way. How do we move? How do we take this boat forward when the direction we each see is maybe different?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's so different that you can't be in the same boat.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's different, but you're able to find enough of a reason for finding that balance between these disparate ways.
Yeah. And I think the most clear, level or approach or whatever is, like, if you go all the way back to that Rajas Tamas Sattva thing, when you encounter the challenges in relationship, it's the same story. You know, you have to figure out, can I get clear around what's happening here?
For me,
because being rajasic about it, that will lead to an outcome, but it's not going to necessarily solve the thing. Being tamasic about it, withdrawing, again, it could lead to an outcome, could lead to splitting up. Either one could lead to splitting up.
Right.
But neither one really solves the problem. And often in like romantic relationships, you just repeat the same pattern then with someone else.
Right.
Until you figure out, hey, it's not the someone else.
Right.
Right. It's the way that I'm dealing in the relationship that's got to be resolved.
Totally.
And
So. Like people who end up dating, keep dating people with the same name or the same face. And you're like, is this the new person you're dating? They're like, yeah. And you're like, you look exactly like the last person you were dating.
Right.
Got
right.
it.
Yeah. But I have a fresh start before I do the same thing.
Right. And then it brings us back to that conflict place, right?
Yeah.
Where you see the thing and yeah. you're in the conflict relationally. And how do I as a person relate differently to that conflict?
Because yeah.
the conflict isn't the problem.
Yeah. Well, you said the word yoga before, right? Mm-hmm, yoga is mm-hmm. relational. Relations are also yoga, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
That's like, how do you make a whole mm-hmm. when you have these different parts? And it's that they have to come into balance,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right? They have to find the balance that works from them. But the thing is always in motion.
Right.
So it's like, how do you find balance mm-hmm. when you're always in motion?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the work of mm-hmm. relationship. That's
right.
why relationships take work.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Because there's no breaks. Like,
yeah.
I mean, like right now my boyfriend is in California and I can be as messy as I want. And I'm like, yeah, so great. But so sometimes you have like little breaks like that, but
yeah.
I don't want to actually stop relating to him.
Yeah.
You know? So it's true. Like it's, you really continue to be in the thing, even when you kind of need to like tap out and take a little break. And so that's really where I, you know, the relational part comes back to yoga practice, like personal practice,
mm-hmm.
because that's really the place I think that we can do that work.
Yeah.
Like what you were saying about 18 hours a day, focus outwards. If we just take one hour of the day or even half an hour of the day to just exclusively focus inwards,
yeah.
not on results, not on trying to create something special,
right.
but allowing ourselves to actually be with what is,
yeah.
then those 18 hours can go along totally differently.
Yeah. And the investment in the practice at the beginning, right, of getting established,
mm-hmm.
which is a word that often comes up in like scriptures or whatnot, being established in your practice, right? Once you have that to tap into, then you can start to bring into those 18 hours a day moments where you're remembering what inspiration you get. And I don't mean literally like, oh, right, I remembered I'm supposed to act like this, but you're energetically hearkening back to your connection again to the wholeness of it. And then that inspires this moment, right? So it's not like you have practice and then you have a whole different life mm-hmm. afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
It's that you have a practice and it shifts you. And that shift can keep being called upon throughout the course of the day,
mm-hmm.
sometimes intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes, oh my God, what is going on right now? Let me take a breath. And it's not just oxygen. It's that I'm letting my mind go quiet for a moment so that I can get a dose of inspiration for this moment
mm-hmm.
and then use it,
mm-hmm.
right? Or I can remember mm-hmm. more times during the day that when someone does something to me, it's not about me,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember that because I'm not constantly being pulled into rajas where I'm going to attack them back, or I'm going to tamas, I'm going to withdraw from this situation, but I can stay sattvic and allow the wisdom to be there.
Mm-hmm. And respond from that place.
Yeah.
So that whatever you say, as opposed to just not addressing it, because I think what you're saying, like we live in a time where we can't just withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the time where, I mean, for me in my life with my karma, I can't just go and live on a hill.
Yeah.
Like, sounds kind of cool, but it's just not my karma right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not this point in my life. It's not this point in the world. It just doesn't feel like what I'm called to do.
Yeah.
So how do I stay in that movement, that motion, but still have the experience of being connected to something that is it's not dense in the same way that people I'm relating to are dense. It's not dense in the same way that the building I work in is dense
mm-hmm.
or any of that. How can I stay with those 3D glasses?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's a teacher in the Ishta lineage. His name is, I always forget how to say the first name. His last name is Bharati. And it's like Shudadara. And he was practicing all these tantra techniques and having all these revelations and, you know, experiences. He's living in a cave doing this work, you know. And I think any of us with the teacher karma, right, get to the place where he got, which is, how can I just like have this knowledge and not share it, right? So he left that, you know, cave life, you know, living off in the wilderness, and came and started teaching it to people. And that's how it came into Ishta, because he came to the ashram at Al's. And, you know, so like everything you're saying too, it's like as you have these insights and you see, wait a minute, this is really, this could be useful stuff, right? Then you want to share it. So you'd have to figure out, okay, so how do I teach this, right? Is it a class? Is it a podcast? Is it a book? Is it a private sessions with people? Is it a, I do workshops? What am I doing? So then you, you know, then you have to get in and make it a solid thing, right? And you create the solid thing. You bring it down into the earth. And then it's like, I think when you're doing that kind of work, it becomes much clearer. It's like much more evident how you're making the connection, right? But a lot of people who are still working on certain issues, they have trouble too. Like they teach from an ego place. So they're not in their yoga, even though they're teaching yoga. So you, it's, again, it's balance while you're in motion.
And I think what you're talking about also as teachers, thinking about why am I a teacher? Why do I want to be a teacher? What's my intention in being a teacher? Because I think that that can get kind of muddy, you know, especially when you're teaching consistently, weekly or many classes a week. It can get, that piece can get off, and I think it can go off. And I think that that piece, like, why am I teaching this? Like, why, like Bharati came out of the cave because he said what was so profound for him, he really needed to share with others. It was, it was so profound. He really couldn't keep it to himself. That sort of teaching, that, that sort of connection and intention for teaching is what we really all need to look for. Even if we're not all Bharati. Because I come to your class and I'm just like, this is so profound. And you're teaching, it's like, it's not about the content. It's about your connection. It's about what your intention in showing up for class is. And then all of these people show up for class to, without even knowing like why they're being called. They're just like, I need to go to Peter Furco's class. I need to go to class at 12:30 at Ishta on a Thursday. I don't know why. It's really amazing. And that's part of the magic that, you know.
I use this word in class today, bhavana, right? And it means like the mood, the feeling of it. I think Wendy uses this felt sense word, right? It's like you feel something, right? And after class, one of the students who did our 200-hour recently came up and said, what was that word you said? You know, and so I told her, and she said, that's 90% of why I come to class, for that. To have that feeling when I'm there, you know, and then that changes my day.
And that's why also I think in Ishta, we're not so concerned about everyone doing exactly what we're instructing or guiding people to do, because it's, we understand that
the particular pose or sequence.
Exactly. So we understand, like I'll have classes where somebody is just doing their own practice in the room at the same time as the practice I'm teaching being different. And it doesn't bother me because I understand that they're here for what they're here for. And they're getting it. And if anything, they're just totally empowered in where, what they're doing, so much so that what I'm offering is not necessarily the right thing for them. And my ego needs to move out of the way and understand that that's actually perfect. That it has nothing to do with me. And yet it's my class.
And I'll have students come up after having done that. They maybe did one pose at the same time that I was saying to do it, right? And said, that was such a great class. But they sincerely mean it.
You know? And then you look at like the Ashtanga tradition where you'll have, you know, 50 people in a room all doing different things. And that's
in Mysore.
Is that Mysore? Like Eddie
Mysore practice.
Eddie Stern School. It's like that.
I don't know if he's in a, I think that, I don't know.
No,
the answer is I don't know, but there is a part of Ashtanga called the Mysore style where you just do, because everybody's doing the same sequence, they know the sequence.
Ah.
So you just do your sequence, you do your practice, and the teacher is just walking among the people who are doing their practice.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing similar practice, but not in a time.
Not sequentially.
Yeah, not in the together, right? So that way the teacher just can comment on each person's practice wherever they are in the sequence.
That makes sense.
And some will do a more advanced sequence that has more challenging postures. And so.
That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. And then I recently went to a yoga class in San Francisco when I was there, and the teacher, I had just gotten off an airplane. I really wanted a yoga mat and to be in a room with people practicing yoga. That was about all I really, that was my intention for coming to class.
Yeah.
And she didn't really offer that many things that I really chose to take.
Uh-huh.
And that was totally fine for me. It was not so fine for her. Like she came up and I could tell that she was, it was like scary for her that I wasn't doing her class.
Yeah. I was just talking to Erica Pack about the same thing.
Yeah.
Cause she's in LA and searching for places to do class.
It's because, you know, I think, I love Erica. Hi, Erica. So I think it's hard sometimes as a teacher, you know, no matter, like, especially earlier on when you're just starting to teach, because sometimes there's this impression where we're so stuck in that materiality that we think, oh, this is what I'm teaching. I'm teaching Warrior Two. I'm teaching externally rotate your right thigh. But it's a part, but it's not the whole piece of what yoga is. And it can get obscured. It can obscure what actually the like vastness of what we're connecting to.
Yeah. And it's super useful to remember that part, to remember that what I'm doing is I'm creating the opportunity for the student to learn how to connect to the vastness of what we are. And how you get there is by pulling these tools out of the yoga toolbox, applying them. But you have to have the intention to at least be present, right? Because you don't need to understand tantric philosophy to get that, to have that bhavana, right? But you need to know that you're not trying to get somewhere else besides where you are right now, right? Because if you think you're supposed to get somewhere else, then you won't pause. You won't notice that you just got somewhere.
Right.
That you just felt this vastness, that you just felt connected. You just felt a letting go of something that had been bothering you. You've just felt a new perspective on something, right? I had a student come up the other day and say, what was it that you were saying at the end? And so I said this, and she goes, uh-huh. And then I said, blah, blah, blah. She goes, uh-huh. And then I said this. And she goes, that was the thing. And then she just started crying. You know, it was like, you have to be there. You have to be open and, you know, listening to yourself and listening. If you have a teacher and the teacher is saying something interesting, you know, hearing what they're saying and processing it in your own self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then... Mm-hmm. There's the pause. There you feel connected to the whole, right?
Yeah.
That's why I say often when I'm working with teachers in teacher training, and we from time to time have some kind of a practice teach or a practicum stop or something like that. And they'll go, oh, I intended to do this and that and the other thing, you know? And I'll say, it does not matter, you know? You can have this great thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when the time's up, the right stuff happened.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You just have to trust that.
Mm-hmm.
Part of being a teacher is to know that you don't control the universe either, you know? You're allowing stuff to flow. You're making your best choices. You're planning. You know, you said something to me earlier about, you know, I realized I should spend a little more effort on X. You know, you do all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then you just have to be there as a channel in the best way that you can.
Yeah.
And trust that you're part of this mechanism of life that allows for each of us to be able to tap into the wholeness of what we are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The unseen.
Yeah. That's the yoga.
Mm.
So, good stuff.
Yeah, that was fun. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, Jenny. So good to talk to you always.
So good to talk to you, too.
Happy Fourth.
Happy Fourth.
Be independent.
Yeah!
Namaste.
Namaste.
I need to make a little clarification. I used the word bhavana during my chat with Jenny. I really meant to use the word bhava, which means the mood or the feeling. Bhavana means to visualize something, especially in a visualization where you're imagining that something is going correctly to try to transform from something smaller or something that's not quite giving the result that you want. Thanks. That's today's episode. Thanks a lot for listening to Peter's podcast. I hope that you find real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living through your practice. Please support me on Patreon, rate the podcast, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.